The last item I want to address before I pass it to Don is the concerns of COVID and health and safety at our facility. We pride ourselves on being leaders in our industry. We pride ourselves on being leaders in health and safety of our employees. It's one of our core values that, we want you to be safe at work, we want you to be healthy at home, we want you to be healthy at work, et cetera. And I think this mentality is one of the reasons that our COVID rate was 3 to 4%, while the rest of the industry was 50 to 90%. Most meat plants in the United States, they had to shut down for a month or 2 months. And I think one of the reasons that they had to do that is they tried to fight through it. They would have an outbreak and just quarantine a small group of people and then keep chugging along, and it wasn't enough. We were a bit different in our approach, which we were one of the first businesses in Franklin to have a COVID action plan, to the point that we actually shared it with the Franklin Business Consortium, say, here's what we're doing, and we believe we're going above and beyond what the CDC guidelines tells us to do, because we don't want our employees to get sick. We need them to be healthy. We need to get our product out the door. Where's I going with that? So how we got ahead of that is we had the belief that we had a positive. We didn't receive a notification from the Franklin Health Department. We just had an employee call us and say, hey, I was tested. I'm not feeling well. I think I may test positive. So Jack, Randy, myself, and some other members of the executive team, we met Thursday night. We said, hey, what should we do? And we discussed for multiple hours, probably till 10 p.m., what should we do? We shut down our plant. Didn't have a positive. We said, let's shut down our plant for at least the weekend. We'll have our employees stay home if they want. We'll pay them for at least a week. If they want to come in, they can. But let's work through the weekend and decide how we're going to handle this. Let's not try to push people in to work. We'll call our customers, let them know we're going to short them. There's no product coming to them. And fortunately, half our workforce showed up that Monday, which was really surprising. And we maintained 50% of our workforce for 2 weeks, which was great because it actually gave us time to breathe and really develop our plan fully before we completely implemented. And then for several weeks after that, even after we brought back our workforce, we did staggered shifts. We ramped down to 50% of production just to ensure that we provide a safe workforce. That leads me to the terminations that we had to do, unfortunately. It wasn't due to COVID retaliation. It's absolutely false. By law, unfortunately, we had to terminate these employees. We had no choice. And we would gladly hire them back. It was 31 of our best employees, and it really put us in a pinch. And we're still in a pinch. So much so that Jack and I were actually on the production line last weekend working the line, packing boxes and loading meat because we don't want to short our customers. That's how passionate we are about our business. So for now, that's all I have to cover until questions. So Don, if you want to dive into the details.
Well, before Don does it, any questions for Mr. Bussin, Executive Management? Alderman Dandridge.
Jerry, I had a chance to go through the facility with you and Jim. Jerry, why don't you just let the people know your background and how many years you've been with Strauss and the certain jobs that you've held at that facility that you just didn't get there yesterday.
So I've been roughly employed at Strauss for 7.5 years. I started employment in 2013 as the corporate controller. I believe it was 6 months later, I moved into an executive director of finance role. And then shortly after that, I moved into the role of CFO. I held that position for roughly 7 years. And in February, after Insight had held the company for roughly 7 months at that point, it was decided that I would assume the role of president.
Okay. Thank you. And I also want to let the public know, I did go through the facility, went through a large majority of the facility. There was not an odor permeating from that facility. You've also got to understand that inside this facility, the core temperature is, it's got to be in the 30s, because I know I had coat and gloves on and it was still cold.
That's
cool. So when the temperature is that low, it's an odor isn't necessarily going to resonate when the temperature is that cold. Is that a true assumption?
Yes.
Yeah, I would say it's no different than a refrigerator at your house, right? If you
Correct.
Have food that spoils and doesn't smell great, you only smell it if you open the
Correct.
Refrigerator door.
Okay.
So I would say refrigeration is definitely one form of odor mitigation.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
Before Jack does his thing, there was some comment about... Yes. You're next. Some comment about violence, which I really take offense to when people talk about people in my community being violent and have no basis for that. So, being a resourceful guy, I asked for the police report for the last 10 years. The net is essentially, it's here, hold on, lots of reports. Here it is. You guys may be interested in this. Other than lockouts, you know, routine stuff, anything that would need a police officer to do something other than traffic ticket or something like that, over the last 10 years, there's been 8 police-related matters, 14 ambulance calls, and 20, Chief, this is what I was asking you about, 20 miscellaneous fire calls, whatever those mean. And
my comments are,
were you able?
Our records management database goes back to January 1st, 1999. I was able to pull up a number of incidents, things like alarms going off, you know, basic things like that. I did not find one ammonia incident. I did not find one fire incident. I did not find one industrial accident. So
just to repeat for what the chief is saying that nobody can hear, did not find one fire, no ammonia accidents, nothing of record that was worth worrying about. Alderman Wilhelm.
Are they using ammonia now?
Yes. I can say that because I took the tour. So did Alderman Dandrea. It's all over the place.
Okay.
And a similar, just a slightly less quantity, right? You have about 10,000 pounds, as I recall the discussion at the Planning Commission.
Yeah, I believe it's about half the quantity, yes.
Okay. Alderman Hanneman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also was given opportunity to tour the plant, and I was amazed at what all they're able to do within that small space. And I would agree with Alderman Dandrea. The odor was literally no different than when I would go to the meat counter at my local Sendix. What you see happening in there is very much what you see happening behind the door at the meat counter. Those are the same types of workers, the same union representing them. They are meat cutters. It is a skilled trade. Maybe not tasteful to everybody, but it is legal employment, for lack of a better word. One of the questions I do have that I posed when I had the tour, and that maybe could dispel some misconceptions. I think people are very worried about truckloads of the waste that you aren't using as part of your finished product, a la the bones or the pieces of meat that are not being sent to the retail or the restaurant marketplace. So can you tell us what happens to that excess waste or unusable product that isn't going into your product?
So I do want to note that we generate very little waste. We feel that, as Randy would say, that the animal is making the ultimate sacrifice, so we don't want to let anything go to waste. So all of the byproducts from the dressing procedure are collected and frozen and packed off and sold. The hides are sold for veal calves. We actually collect the blood, and that is sold to a pharmaceutical type company that uses it for a serum that later goes into animal vaccines. So really the only thing that's generated that's waste is the rendering. So it's all of the material around organ meat that goes into a rendering tank that will be in an enclosed area in the facility that will be refrigerated. Periodically throughout the week, when it fills up, then we'll dispatch a company that we sell it to come pick it up. That facility is a few hours north, and that is a rendering processing facility that it goes to, and they process it into numerous products.
Alderman Barber.
Can you hear me? One of the things I want to do is thank you personally for taking my constituents seriously, as I have received many, many calls, complaints, emails. I want to just let you know that the questions that were raised, I passed on to you, I passed on to your team, and I've gotten solid answers from them. They took it seriously, you took it as a group very seriously, and tried to answer them, and I appreciate your candor and honesty in doing that. In fact, I've shared them with my constituents again, as I received them back from you. And I have not received any negative response on those answers. In fact, I've received thank yous for at least the fact that the questions were brought to you and you've answered them. So there's an appreciation for that. One of the things I don't have an answer for is the traffic. I have a concern about traffic yet. Does it have to start at 1 o'clock? And you know, what control do you exercise over the drivers? Are they independent drivers? Are they your drivers? How does that play out on the roadways? And I understand your philosophy and I understand your desire, but truck drivers are still historically a breed unto themselves, let's put it that way. So my concern is, what exercise do you have over that? And can you change the hours to make it less than 1 o'clock? Or 1 a.m. to start the process of delivery?
So the reason for 1 a.m. is to mimic our current hours of delivery. And the reason that we do that is we want the animals have to rest for 2 hours upon delivery. We can't do anything until they rest for that period of time. And our goal is to have the scheduled deliveries for the day finished early in the morning. So they're really not seen. If we were to push back the hours, then it would just, you know, then we would have animals being delivered at 2, 3 p.m. in the afternoon, which would align with bus routes, et cetera. And, you know, just like everyone else has concerns, we have concerns as well. So we schedule in a way that we try to have the least amount of impact and the least amount of visibility. So that's for livestock trucks. For everything that's outbound, we actually own our own logistics entity that is domiciled in Waukesha. So we have a cold storage facility there that we operate. So what we will do is we will fill a truckload quantity at a time as we produce throughout the day. And then that's going to get shipped to our DC in Waukesha, where it will be distributed from there. So our truck traffic at this new facility for the first 3 years is really going to mimic what we already do out of the business park, because the big driver is we need additional space so we can bring in additional equipment and have higher throughput on the processing side when it comes to making patties and, you know, bricks of hamburger and meatloaf, etc. And then in addition, we need a larger building for cattle. You know, cattle are twice the size of veal calves, and our goal is we're going to slowly do less veal calves to the point that we may do zero, and then we'll replace that volume with beef. So the volume going out the door for, you know, the first 2-3 years is going to be exactly the same. So truck traffic won't like the traffic impact isn't really zero for the first 2 to 3 years. It's just our pattern changes. So instead of going to Ryan Road up to 94, we're now going to take Loomis to different highways to go to our customers. But the number of trucks will be relatively the same.
Can I add one more thing on the reason 1 o'clock in the morning? So when we're picking up cattle are coming in, we're scheduling for the cattle to arrive. So when the cattle arrive, we don't want them to just sit on, it's really a humane welfare issue. We don't want them to have to sit on the trailer for an extra 2 or 3 or 4 hours because they're ahead of their schedule. So there's reasons where maybe there's weather, so they need to come in a little earlier. Maybe there's breakdowns. There's just lots of different things that pretty much when the animals are arriving, we try to schedule them as tight as possible, that we just really want to get them off the trailer because from a humane welfare standpoint, it's
And who are the drivers on the delivery side?
So we contract all of our own drivers. They're not, so Jerry talked about having a logistics company that's on the outbound freight and the refrigerated freight. We do not do that with the livestock, but we do contract and we know all of our drivers. So it's a third party.
Alderman Wilhelm and then Alderman D'Andrea. And then let's get back to the bill. But I want to have your questions answered, but I want to make sure that the constituents' questions get answered too.
Well, Mayor, I just want to make sure that I understand what process we're going to head from this point on. Will the council members be able to make their own statements and conclusions, or are we going to continue on with only question and answers, or how will, because I'm not sure at what point I'll be able to say, you know, if this is only we're going to be allowed question and answers, or how are we going to proceed?
I'd like to have them answer the questions that were asked by the constituents.
Right.
But I'd also like them to answer your questions as well. But I want to make sure that the constituents' questions are answered first.
Right. But what if I don't have questions? I just want to make a statement. Will I be allowed at some point to make statements and not questions?
Well, with a smile on my face, I don't know that I've ever been able to prevent you from making a statement.
Okay. And then I just had one more question. Could you please share the police report with us?
Sure. Alderman D'Andrea.
Thanks.
Jerry, when we talked about the animal welfare, we should tell the people at the time that the animal comes in, how long is that animal there until it's out the door? In my conversations with you guys, is you expedite all animals that come in are processed that day and then out the building going to the grocery store. So can you just elaborate a little bit on that? That's the care that you're taking in regards to there's nothing standing still and waiting. It's a complete process. And you saw the length of this building. This will allow the production and the streamlining to be much more efficient than it currently is in the buildings that you have there, in the building you have there.
Yes, so to describe the process, the animal comes in and rests for a few hours, and then at that point, they basically go into production. At that point, it's immediate. We'll clear out that lot relatively quickly. I would say in 30 to 45 minutes, and then it's processed on the harvest floor. I would say the whole process and then probably take 16 minutes. But then we do hang the carcasses for 2 days. It's better to let it age. It's curing tastes better, and temperature, you have to get the temperature down as well, and then it goes into processing right after that, and it is shipped directly to customers within days.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Good evening. My name is Don Olson. I'm Vice President of Design for ESI Design Services, which is the design arm of ESI Group, which is the design-build company, or part of the design-build company that will be putting this this project up if hopefully approved.
So before you go into it, you and I don't know each other, we're not related, we're not married.
No relation, you know, no. You're Owen, I'm going to assume that's probably Norwegian. I'm Ian, Danish, so...
We don't go to the same barber.
You didn't though, it kind of looks like we could almost.
You didn't give me any money, and none of that, right? Okay.
That is correct.
Because there's lots of rumors and people making statements. So, okay, good. Sorry, Don. Go ahead.
All right. Just to kind of give you a quick background about ESI, we are a national design build firm. We are based out of Heartland, Wisconsin, and we specialize in food distribution and food processing projects. That's all we do. We don't build or design churches, schools, hospitals. All we do are food processing and food distribution type products. So that's kind of give you kind of real basic rough idea of who we are. On this first slide that we have here, we want to talk a little bit about traffic and kind of get into some of the detail. Jerry's already mentioned a couple of things. I'm just going to go into it a little bit farther. As you can see, this is an overview of the overall site. There's Highway 36 is on the north end of the project. It's angling down. That's the primary truck route. Off to the east is 112th. And then also on the little bit of north, you've got the existing Old Ryan Road. On there, to the west, there's Highway 45 coming down, and it's kind of cut off, but basically at the very south end would be Oakwood Road. And that, the primary truck traffic for the project is all going to be coming up either Highway 36 or 45. It will not be coming down Highway 100 and feeding from the north. Everything will be coming from the south and west. And then, if we could just flip to the second slide real quick. Again, we already kind of discussed a couple things, but again, this site slide is rotated 90 degrees, so north is to the right. As stated before, we come off of Highway 36, which would be on the far right-hand side of the drawing. And that, there's automobile entrance, a single automobile entrance for parking for the employees. And then a separate truck entrance, and that's where all the livestock will come in, and then any finished product will leave out of that area. The livestock, again, as already previously stated, unloaded on the one end of the building. The process is a very linear process as the animals move through the building. At the far end or on the north side of the building is where the loading docks are. That's really where all the finished goods are. We're showing a future dashed area on this for future expansion of the building. The base part of the building is 152,000 square feet. There's a potential to build on another 106,000 onto the site. And that, I think Jerry stated previously, or at least I think at our community meeting, that's something that's far off and far down the line. It's nothing is set to happen anytime soon on that particular piece. But what we wanted to do is actually design the site to be able to handle that. So the detention basins that are on the site, the three that have been noted before, again, those are for stormwater only. There's no wastewater that goes in there. This is just stormwater runoff that's going to essentially come from the grass areas. And some could come from some of the paving areas, but for the most part, this is all, it's just picking up stormwater on site. And then that stormwater is ultimately pushed, distributes out to...
Alderman Willow.
Well, we were talking about the building size. So your current building is about 42,000 square feet. That's under an acre. This one is nearly 4 acres.
Correct.
So, and the head that you're doing a day, you say now is 500, and then you say your head you're doing here is 500. Why do you need that much more building to do the same amount? And is that going to be your cap, or is there an idea to get bigger than 500?
So our cap will be 500 head per day.
For both phases or just one phase one?
For both phases. So for the first 2 to 3 years with our current forecast, our plan is to remain at 250 head a day. So this initial phase one can only handle 250. If we want to go to 500, we'll actually have to add additional carcass chill rooms, which is designated as that small dotted line in the green area. Our current facility can do 500 head a day, and at certain days of the week, it does do 500 head a day. But we need to note that these are veal calves that are roughly half the size really a third the size of steers. So that's one reason that the facility is going to be a bit larger, because the harvest floor component needs to be significantly larger. And then the processing area really is just to incorporate our existing equipment with some additional automation that will be added to the end of the lines. Because if you were to tour our current facility, it's really, we're sardines in there. And quite frankly, we should, with what we do with that operation, we should have 80,000 square feet. So that's one reason that the building is going to grow four times.
So you wouldn't have any problem with putting a 500 head cap in your special use document?
Yeah, I don't know if it would be 500. I think we would, but we're willing to discuss a cap, yes.
Well, the reason why I'm asking is I've asked several times. I've heard it at the Plan Commission. I've heard it at the council several times, and I had you verify it. And you said you're doing 500 a day, and under your current special use, your barn only holds 300. And you're saying you're doing 500, so there is some kind of a cap here. And once you get to 500, you're considered a significant industrial user. Even the slaughtering process is a significant industrial user. And you don't currently have an MMSD permit for being a significant industrial user at 300, let alone 500. I verified that with MMSD and the DNR. That is something you are required to have that you do not have currently. That's concerning to me. I get that the new facility will help take care of that, but you've been telling us things that aren't really matching up with some of the things that I've been researching. So the other thing that comes to mind is we have public documents, Plan Commission, Council documents, staff write-ups that talk about 20 trucks a day. Now, today, I got this one. The total is 134 trucks a
day. That's for a food distribution facility as a comparison.
We're trying to show a comparison.
Right here you have 24 trucks a day on the 1,500. But then that's phase one, so if you add phase two, it's going to be much higher than
no.
There's 40 head on the truck.
There's 40 head on, that's cattle delivery.
Correct.
But then you have...
What comes in goes out.
But wait a minute. You're getting ahead of the presentation, so let them do the presentation so that they can explain the slide.
Well, you told
None
me
None of your aldermen colleagues have seen that page yet, so let's let them get back
no,
to
No, this
the
is the one they...
I haven't seen it yet. Mm. It's coming up. Ms. Rolson, continue.
I thought I'd be able to ask questions. Okay.
Well, let's flip to the next page.
But let's get to the page first.
Right. This will be. Okay, this is predicted inbound and outbound traffic for the site. So the top chart is for Strauss Brands based on 150,000 square foot facility. We're looking at cattle delivery. Now, this is ultimately at 500 head a day. These numbers are based on 500 head a day, just so you know. Okay. And a truck will, depending on the size of the cattle, I believe we usually figure somewhere between 38 and 42 cattle per truckload. So roughly to get to 500, you need 12 trucks to come in on that. Again, this is assuming a delivery starting as early as 1 a.m. With ending cattle delivery at 1 p.m., that would average one truck per hour for that 12-hour period. Finished goods outbound, there'd be about eight trucks would take care of the outbound product leaving the facility on a given day. They'd be going from about 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Again, roughly one truck per hour over that eight-hour time span. There could be up to three trucks for waste removal per day. Again, that's going to happen after the shift is done, so you're between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m., so it's one and a half trucks per hour. And then essentially you'd have like a truck for miscellaneous goods inbound for cardboard and plastics for packaging and that type of thing.